Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Dr. Lori Buckley returns to this program, and I am very pleased. We've been friends a very long time. We're colleagues. We have co-narrated some sex ed videos in the past, but we are women mainly with outsized appetites. So we're perfectly poised to talk about sex and food. Isn't this going to be fun, Dr. Lori, to talk about sex and food with each other and for our listening audience?
Yes, it is. I got to tell you, the connection seems a little rattly, but hopefully all is well. Anyways, I am excited to be here. Thank you so much. And we are talking about a couple of our favorite topics.
I suggested you get a book that was published in 2006, and it's by Gail Green, and it's called Insatiable, and the subtitle is Tales from a Life of Delicious Excess. This is a great book. It still is available on Amazon, and I recommend it to the listening audience. There are many things about it that we're going to kind of use some of her ideas as a foundation for the discussion today. I especially like that before she actually got the job in 1969 of being the food critic for New York Magazine, she was a reporter, a journalist, and she actually had went to interview Elvis Presley, who was at the height of his popularity, and actually he was just beginning. He was the young and the beautiful Elvis, and it was interesting because what she remembers most about her tryst with Elvis was that she didn't remember much about the sex, but afterwards, he asked her to order him a fried egg sandwich. So she thought, well, I must be destined for a life as a food critic. So that's what she got. But she also loved sex. So her book is about food and sex. Dr. Lori, your passion about sex is obvious. You're a sex therapist. You've got a great book called 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. You have a website called Stuff of Love, which has sex toys that are handpicked by you, and I want to talk about some of the ones that I love from your website there. And we're going to offer the listeners a discount if they go to that website. So it's obvious that that you are passionate about sex and in your work. But what about food?
Yes. So I am equally, or maybe even more. No, equally, I would say, passionate about food.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, like the book Insatiable, like so many things, food and sex are connected, right? They're two of the greatest pleasures in life. If you do it right, they can also be problematic. But if you do it right, it really is. They really are our main joys of pleasure and sensuality, because when we engage our senses fully in either one of those activities, whether it's cooking or eating or making love or having sex, everything becomes amazing. It just gets, you know, enhanced it's so rich and fulfilling in so many ways. And I think a lot of us, and myself included, at times can have sex or eat, you know, sort of mindlessly and not really just enjoy it in its full capacity, so it's not as satisfying. But I do think that they go well together, which is why we're talking about it today. And a long time ago, I did have a podcast called Sex, Love, and Food. So I've always enjoyed really talking about both. And like you, I imagine, I think this would be something fun to talk about, use analogies of food in sex therapy quite often.
Yes, yes, I do too. Tell me one of your favorite analogies that seems to resonate a lot with your clients.
I think the one I probably use the most often is around trying new things. You know, we might
yes.
have foods that we know we love. And if we go to a restaurant, we may order the same thing, or we may go to the same restaurant, or we just tend to eat the same food that we love, which is great. We don't want to get rid of that, you know, the things that we love and the things that we enjoy. But oftentimes we'll think, oh, I tried that once, this other food, and I didn't like it. Or I don't like Chinese food because I tried it and I didn't like it. And I always say, one, our tastes change. We evolve as we get older and wiser. And, you know, if you use the example of Chinese food, for example, well, what kind of Chinese food? And what restaurant? Who is the chef? And there's so many different variables to take into, you know, into account. And so I think it's taking a little bit of an adventurous spirit when it comes to trying new food or foods you've tried before but you didn't like them at one time, as well as sex. So people usually can relate to that. They'll be like, yeah, that's happened. I stuck with the same thing, and when I tried something new, a new restaurant or a new type of food, I discovered something I never would have known, and they get excited about that. So I find that to be the one I probably use the most. What about you?
Well, I don't use analogies about food as much as I should. I don't cook. Well, I used to. I used to cook and entertain quite a lot, and now I don't cook as much. But you're the cook, and you're even. And I want to get into what you're doing now that you live in Napa. But I'm certainly. I love to talk about sensuality and food, and I even talked about sensuality and food in my book, Love in the Time of Corona, and what I said there is that the process of cooking and eating engages most of your senses, and for instance, you get a lot of touch stimulation from doing hands-on preparation, the peeling, the chopping. When I do cook, I do it with my husband because he's got great knife skills, the chopping, and combining ingredients and sautéing and all of that. And then you can use your visual awareness with an appealing presentation of your culinary creations. I think the Japanese are some of the Japanese cuisine is just wonderful in terms of the presentation. It's like a lot of their plates are like works of art. And
absolutely, yeah.
Yes. So the presentation is very important. So that's the visual, and then the tastes and the smells, and it engages all everything, and your sense of touch as you chew and swallow, and especially if you slow down and savor the experience. I use the word slow down. That can be so useful in terms of, well, sex. The slow down is what I've used a lot.
Yes, absolutely. So important. Yes.
Yes.
It's kind of what I was saying before, where a lot of us eat or have sex, you know, only partially, you know, and
mm-hmm.
when we can be fully present and fully engaged and, like you said, really pay attention to those senses,
mm-hmm.
everything changes. It's a very different experience. And I like to use the example, too, of mindless eating where this happens to me, well, not as much now, but it certainly used to happen more than I would like to admit, where I would be eating a sandwich or a protein bar or something, and then I'd be like, where did it go? Where's my protein bar? Where's my sandwich? I couldn't find it. Of course, I ate it, but I didn't even remember eating it because I was multitasking.
Yes.
You know, so
we women are pretty good at multitasking, but it doesn't give you the fullest experience unless you're
absolutely
very mindful and in the moment.
Yes, it's so true. So we can eat, we can have sex, and it can be good or not. But when
yes.
we are completely present and really enhancing all of those and experiencing all of those senses, like you're saying, it becomes an incredible experience.
It really does. So in my book, Love in the Time of Corona, One of the suggestions that I make, and this is from the chapter Revitalize Your Senses, Chapter 5, feed each other hand to mouth. And I write, this often works best with dessert, and I include some of my favorites. They're the favorites of a lot of people, the chocolate-covered strawberries. Grapes can be fresh or frozen. Watermelon slices, especially now, watermelon, so sweet and juicy. And chocolate truffles. So you take turns feeding each other. Again, we're back to very slowly. Don't rush through it. Take the time to delight in feeding your partner to savor the taste and texture of the food. Some foods that are fun to try are aphrodisiac foods. Should we just take a moment to talk about aphrodisiac foods?
Sure. I mean, you know, I don't think there's been any real solid scientific evidence.
No.
But I do think there is a. Yeah, but there's a lot of. I would say more research that's been done about certain things that are in food, for example, like zinc. You know, things that can heighten certain parts of our. I don't know if it's our sensuality, but it could be blood flow, a lot of different things that things in foods can do. But I also think there's something either psychological or just sort of subliminal about the way food looks and the way it feels that can kind of arouse us.
Now, the zinc thing is interesting, and of course, you're right. There hasn't been a lot of scientific evidence. It's more a placebo effect with the aphrodisiac foods, but we can still talk a little bit more about them. But with the zinc for instance, oysters. Oysters are very high in zinc, and that's good for the brain, and has a link to testosterone. So that increases arousal. So that's probably one of the best examples of an aphrodisiac. You know, the most common are oysters, champagne, and chocolates. Those are the most common. But
if you think about oysters,
oysters too.
I mean, look at how they look. I mean,
yes,
they're sexy, and the way they feel. So that's what I mean. It's also a sensual thing, right? The way it looks, the way it feels. And I don't know. It just seems to me it looks a bit like a vagina. I don't know if that's just me, but
kind of
slippery. Who knows? But you know what? It's fun. It's fun, and I think it's more about the senses than it is about anything.
Yeah.
But look, it hasn't been completely disproven either. So why not?
That's right.
It hurts.
That's right. You know, there's some intriguing, fun beliefs about aphrodisiacs from history. For instance, priests were banning chilies that might make them too hot. Nuns not being allowed to eat certain foods might increase arousal, so it was thought. And some of those ideas. But let's talk about a little bit more about, for instance, having a Tom Jones style feast. And I did put this in my book too. Tom Jones. Well, you know, some of you are too young listening, probably a lot of you, because it came out in 1963, the movie Tom Jones, and it was the winner of the Oscar for Best Picture of that year, 1963. I saw it in 1963. I was in college then. That's how old I am. But I remember being so impressed with the movie. And what did I know except that it impressed me from a sensual, I was still a virgin then, too, but it just impressed me from a sensual standpoint. So you have this Tom Jones, a British comedy, and it includes a classic scene. It's a classic in terms of the whole history of film cuisine. So you have Albert Finney. He was a wonderful actor. And another less-known woman, Joyce Redman, and they voraciously consume a huge meal at a country inn, and they're engorging on the food with their hands and fingers, and they're like wild uninhibited animals the way they go at it. And
yes.
While they're going at the food, they look at each other lustily, and they don't speak a word. They let their arousal build before they run off. And we don't know this for sure, but it was 1963. I think they went off to bed together. But
we can assume that that's what happened. Now, I am not old enough to have seen that when it came out. However, I have, I don't know, obviously I've seen the movie, but I do believe even now they show the clip so frequently, you know, maybe at the Oscars or whenever they're talking about film and classic film, it is one of the clips that shows up. I am sure you can find it on YouTube or Google it or something like that. Oh, you know, another really sexy food movie, 9 1/2 Weeks.
That is
Remember that? True,
and I have recommended that to clients. Let's talk about 9 1/2 Weeks.
Yes, it was Kim Basinger. Am I saying her name right?
Yes, you are.
And was it Mickey Rourke?
Very good.
Mickey Rourke, who, by the way, at that time, he was sexy and handsome.
Oh, he...
Not that he is it now.
He did not age well.
You know.
Let's be frank. He did not age well. But he was one sexy guy in 9 1/2 Weeks, which was came out in the 80s, I think.
That sounds about right. I don't know if I saw it in the theater, but I certainly saw it around the time it came out, for sure. So, yes, that was another sexy movie. You know, there's a lot of really great food movies. Babette Feast, which isn't about sex at all, but so much about the food that it is, I don't know, sensual. And this is what we're talking about. And you know what else? Dr. Diana, I think it's also just about pleasure. You know,
it's
if we can get
pleasure.
Into that mode of pleasure... You know, this, I think oftentimes people have dinner, a good dinner, before they have sex. I don't always think that's ideal. You know, like on date nights, people go out for a nice dinner, and then they go home and, you know, sort of assume that they're going to have sex. And sometimes that's not so great. You know, you're full, it's late, you're tired. But at the same time, I get it in the sense that you're awakening the pleasure zones, the senses, and you're experiencing that together. It's sort of like foreplay, in a way, eating. So I think if you do it right, you space it out, and you don't eat too heavy, you know, it could work. Or like you said, just eat in bed, feed each other food, or feed each other off of each other's bodies, too, is another idea.
Oh, that's fun. There was that famous scene in Sex and the City where Samantha is lying naked on the table, on the dining room table, and she's put handmade sushi all over her body, and then her lover is so late, and she's very angry, but the idea would be that she would surprise him, and he'd come home and find this sushi on her naked body, and they would have a great time. So
yes, I wouldn't recommend sushi, but, you know, the idea is still a good one.
I know.
Fruit might be a little more fun, but, you know, it's an idea. Yeah, so I do think it's pleasure, it's the senses. It's also the cooking, and we you know, talked a little bit about that, but, you know, all of the senses used in that, but there's also something about cooking for somebody or cooking with me that is really, I think, engaging and fun and sensual, and you're creating together, and it always tastes better when you cook it, I think, as opposed to even going to a really nice restaurant, you know, as wonderful as that can be. It's never quite the same as when you put your whole soul into it with the chopping and the stirring and the smells.
Yes,
and
you are a really good cook. One of the best meals I've ever had was a meal at your home, and this goes back maybe 8 or 9 years, something, maybe not quite that long. No, it wouldn't have been that long. But anyway, it was probably 7.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and Brian and I stayed with you and Alan, and for listeners who are just listening to you for the first time, Alan died in a very unfortunate accident. Was it 6 years ago now?
5 years ago. Yeah, it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, 5 years ago. And but he certainly appreciated your cooking, and you made that night, and there were two other couples. It was just a fabulous, fun evening. And you made from scratch pasta, and you still do that. You still make pasta from scratch. Tell us, please, how you began to get interested in food and cooking. What's your history in that regard? It's obvious about the sexuality part, but tell the listening audience about how you got started with food.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember when I was younger, in my 20s and 30s, I thought, I don't want to cook, I don't want to clean, I don't want to be that woman, you know?
Yeah.
And
right,
as I got wiser, I realized that there was more to it than that. And so I started baking in my 30s, and that was fun, decorating cakes and all that. It was sort of creative and artistic. But I was really wanting to have some really good French onion soup. And I love a good French onion soup, but there are not many really good French onion soups around. And I remember my mother had taken me to a French restaurant when I was really young. Maison Girard, I think is what the name of it was, in Beverly Hills, where they had French onion soup. I think that was my first experience, and I loved it. And then I remember when I was living in Germany, I had another really amazing French onion soup. But I could count on one hand how many times, less than three times. But I really wanted to do that. So I started, studying and figuring out how to make it, and I tried to make it, and it took me quite a few tries to get it the way I wanted it. I have a good palate, and I'm able to put things together pretty well, and I was able to figure out a way to make an amazing French onion soup, which I still make to this day, and all my friends who have had it always ask me to make it, and it's actually not that difficult once you know what you're doing, but that was the thing that got me started, so that was my signature dish. And then from there, every time I wanted to eat something that I really loved, because, no one can do it the way you're going to do it or the way you want it, I started studying there. And then I started going to, when I go to Italy, which I go often, I would always take cooking classes, and I still take cooking classes. And I just found it to be so enjoyable, the whole thing. I love not just the eating. Some people say, I think it was it even in the book Insatiable, where she said you don't always like the cooking, but you like the meal. You like you don't always like having made it, but you like enjoy having eaten it. I think she was the one who said that, but I'm not sure. I actually love the making of it. Just being able to turn a bunch of ingredients, it's alchemy, into something amazing, and to share it. And I don't really like to cook so much alone, although sometimes I do. I'll turn on some music and have some wine, and I make it an event, and I enjoy it. But it's never as satisfying as being able to share it with people who I love.
Yes, it is. It is satisfying to share that, and you have continued. I know you go to Italy. You take cooking classes there. Now that you're living in Napa, you joined the Culinary Institute of America, which is rather well known. And tell us about that and what that's like.
Yes. Oh my God, so exciting! So I moved here in March. So just recently, because of COVID, like so many people, apparently it's a trend, people are moving. I was able to work remotely, realized that I really loved it. My clients loved it too. And I thought, oh my goodness, I can live anywhere. And I've always loved Napa. I've been here many, many times. And it's always, every time you go on a vacation, you think, oh, I'd like to live here. But I realized, I actually can. I can live anywhere. And I just went online, found a place to live, and moved out here in March. And the Culinary Institute was closed because of the pandemic. I checked it out, and I knew they were going to be opening, and I signed up for classes. I was there, wine classes and food classes. And I was able to be there the first time they opened up in a year and a half and, take a wine tasting class.
That must have been fun. Everybody was so eager to get involved again with food and wine, right?
I mean, I literally, and I think probably most people in the room, there weren't that many of us, but, got teary-eyed. We were drinking champagne and celebrating the fact that was open, and we were in a place with people. And this was, I think it was in, oh gosh, it might have been in March, April. I think it might have been in May. So it was the first time they had opened, and it was just an amazing thing. Like, we're all experiencing now, the world is opening up. Feels like we have survived this pandemic and life is getting back to feeling somewhat normal, and being able to be in a group of people drinking wine in Napa at the Culinary Institute of America, I was just beside myself. I was like, oh my God, I just felt so blessed, which I am absolutely blessed. And it was just an incredible thing. So yes, they have they do have a lot of different food classes, cooking classes, and wine classes, and you know, Napa is a place of food and wine for sure, and it's a very sensual place to live. It's beautiful too, you know, just surrounded by beauty, which I love.
It is, and so in Insatiable. So this again, this book was published in 2006, but she wrote about a lot about the 70s because the 70s was a time when America began to be really interested in food, and she wrote that she had an increasingly glamorous life as the New York Magazine's restaurant critic. And then she said, and my increasingly astonishing sexual discoveries as a divorced woman in that wondrous moment between the pill and the plague. So this was the 70s, right? Between the birth control pill and AIDS. And And she was fearless. She had vivid fantasies, and she wasn't afraid to make them come true. So it's a very sort of it's a book that if you like food and sex, it gives you lots of inspiration, I would say.
There's even some interesting little recipes in there.
Yes, and two that I have limited cooking abilities compared to you, but there were two recipes in the book that I definitely want to try. They didn't look too complicated, but they also appealed to my taste. And one was almost like Mom's macaroni and cheese on page 19, and the other one was corn soup with sautéed scallops and bacon. On page 348.
That sounds good. Now, you may not cook often, but I have had dinner at your house. It was a while ago. But I remember you being
a
great
cook. Yes,
yes.
Yes.
You were a wonderful cook. Now, I just have to ask, because you did, when you sent me an email talking about us doing the show today, you asked me a question. You said, I forget the way you worded it, like what's better, or what do you prefer? Good sex or food?
For me, it was sex. We both are women with passions about sex and food, and I suggested that maybe sex was a little more prominent for my first passion and food second. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what you said, yeah, and I was thinking about that. I don't know if I would say that. I think, if I had door A and door B, and door A had a man that I was crazy about, and we could have wonderful sex, or door B was an amazing, wonderful meal, what would I pick? I would pick door A. But if it was a matter of just sex versus food, I'm going to say sometimes the food is the better choice.
Yes. Well, I might have said that too. I just happened to be, you talked a moment ago about being blessed, and I was really blessed to meet, you've heard this before, and regular listeners have heard it, but I met Brian through Match.com 10 years after my late husband, Charlie, died. 10 years, so I had 10 years to be single, and then I met Brian, and he is just the most, here we are seniors, and we're just having such a robust sex life, and I still can hardly believe it, and we've been together for over 10 years now and married for over 3, so so I'm very blessed because I've got an amazing lover, and it's pretty compelling.
Well, and you're also, you know, informed and educated. Look, it's
true.
Proof that, and I've always believed this, that, you know, the older we get, and even in long-term relationships, if we do it right, we can have the best sex of our lives the older we get and in our relationships that are long-term. But most people don't, because they have the belief from all the ubiquitous messages about, oh, when you're married or when you get older, or when you're in a long-term relationship, you know, sex basically goes out the window. And that's why I wrote my book. That's why you wrote your book. I mean, it's just not true. But when we believe that it's true, then we don't do anything to change it. So I love hearing the story about you and Brian. It inspires me. It's been 5 years since Alan died, so I figure I got another 5 years that, you know, I can
be single. Oh, you'll do it faster than I did it. Although neither of us,
you know,
ever want. I did not want to settle, and you don't want to settle. And
nope.
You have so much to offer, Dr. Lori Buckley. So much to offer. So you'll find a good man eventually, I think. The pickings are a little smaller in the field of Napa, but...
I started dating when I moved here because, yes. You know, the pandemic was pretty much over, and I thought I didn't know anybody here when I moved here, so I did meet a couple of men before I even moved from Match, and I dated one for a little while, but I didn't, I wasn't feeling it. So it was nice to, It was nice to go out with him for a little while. He was interesting and fun, but, you know, it wasn't meant to last. But you know what, dating can be fun, and it doesn't have to be meant to last. So,
exactly,
you know, I'm just
going
to enjoy myself and date, and if I should find, you know, someone who feels like someone I want to be with more or spend my life with, that would be great. And if not, that's great, too. So, you know, we can have a very full life.
That's so true. And if we spend any time in a relationship and then it doesn't succeed, if we've kept our eyes open throughout, then we should come away from that relationship with some learning. What did you learn from it? And I'm often saying to clients, keep your eyes open. Learn and improve. Learn and improve.
Yes. It's so true.
And and there's some statistics that you need to see about, well, actually, Helen Fisher also suggests this. She says, see nine different people when you're doing online dating. And she was hired, by the way, for Match.com because she did, as you know, she did all of those brain scan studies of people newly in love and then together a long time. But she says go out on 9 dates and then stop and pick, because your brain can't handle much more than 9. If you're so lucky.
I mean, you know, who has that kind of time? or selection. But I like the idea of it. It sounds good. Look, at my age, I know it's certainly about me. I think I always tell my clients, too, to get out there, date a lot of people, because they're, you know, there's a lot to learn, certainly, about dating, but also about what you want and what's important to you. So I think I'm at the place where I'm very, very clear about that. So did I learn anything from this? Not really. I will tell you that I knew early on that this probably wasn't going to be somebody that I was going to spend a lot of time with, but I went out with him as long as it was enjoyable. And, maybe I stayed with him a couple of weeks too long, you know, but ultimately I don't really regret that. So, you know, it felt good. And
I think you told me a few things about this guy. And I think he benefited from knowing you if he would just listen and have enough self-awareness. And I'm because anybody and you can be a great sexual teacher, mentor. But, of course, some men are, some men are intimidated by a woman who knows a lot about sex because she's a sex therapist in part, and maybe she's had a lot of lovers in her life. So,
yeah, I think that a man with, and I don't tell people I'm a sex therapist until I get to know them. But I find that they can be intimidated where they either feel, you know, that I'm going to be judging them, or they judge me. Like, I don't know what kind of fantasies they make up about what that's going to look like. But, you know, it's true. It's like the red flags, you know, when you're dating, you want to look out for those red flags. And I knew, like I said, I knew early on. I saw where he never asked me any questions about me, you know, those kinds of things. But I also give people the benefit of the doubt, because sometimes people are nervous. Men oftentimes want to seem interesting and want to impress somebody that they like. and that's, I think, a mistake. I think I always say it's much better to be interested than interesting, which makes you more interesting when you're interested in asking questions.
Absolutely.
And back and forth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just want to tell a side story here. In the early 90s, Dr. Walter Bortz and I did two studies. This is when I lived in Palo Alto. Two studies on aging and sexuality, and one was a study of some 1,200 different luncheons, SIRS, Sons in Retirement. We gave these guys questionnaires, and there was one remarkable questionnaire where he added, "My wife and I have been married 50 years, and we still have a great sex life, and the reason is she is still interested and interesting." And that's a great combination. You've got to be interested as an older person and interesting. Yes. Keep it fresh. Keep it new.
Do things on your own. Have your own friends, your own hobbies.
Yes.
Those things are important. Yeah.
Very
important. That.
I also
believe that, as we were talking about before, the idea of, being a teacher or a mentor, that in good relationships, we're always teachers and learners or students, ideally, about
lots
of things. And I think to approach life and relationships and sex with a beginner's mind or learner's brain, whatever you want to call it, is always such a wonderful adventure, because you just don't know what you're going to learn. But when you go in thinking that you know everything, or your partner should know everything, that's when it becomes really problematic. Those expectations will stop you from having the kind of experiences and adventures and pleasure that are possible.
That is very, very true, and I like what you said about, in good relationships, we can be both teachers and learners. This is related. Somebody did, it was a small study, and if I remembered this enough about it, I would have cited it in my book even, but I didn't remember where I read it. But I remember the substance of it, which was that the question was, do sex therapists have better sex than the rest of us? And for this, in this particular study of sex therapists, the answer was yes. And the reason was that sex therapists have vast amount of knowledge, and so we can have sex, we can make love without anxiety. And anxiety ruins sex for a lot of people. Anxiety,
yes.
Performance, and all that. But we have more confidence, and sexual confidence is very sexy, isn't it?
Oh, my God, yes. Absolutely. And it's kind of what we were talking about before, too, when you're in your head, you're not in the moment. And if you're not fully in the moment, you're going to be, cutting yourself short. You're not going to be experiencing the sensations and the pleasure as fully as you would if you're not in your head, to be fully present and in your body. And you're right, as a sex therapist, of course we have, lots and lots of information and experience, and it's not about the things we know as much as what that gives us, which is the confidence and the ability to just be fully in the moment. So I love that. That makes a lot of sense.
And the way that Gail Green ends this book, Insatiable, is she says, because it talks about being, well, I'll read it. I'll just read a couple sentences.
Okay.
I did have that happiness. It was a gift of living in the moment. So many moments in the mouth trade, that means, of course, food, right? We're ecstatic.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Even the pain of not getting what you wanted could be ecstatic, though the withdrawal of love was shattering. In wanting to give directions to the joy, recipes for sensuous adventure, I don't think I ever let sadness or doubt creep into my column. But anyway, I wanted to read that because of, she said how important it is to be living in the moment, whether you're making love or eating food.
Yes.
And
that's it. It's the secret to pleasure in life, really, being able to appreciate every moment. And, you know, I talk about beauty. When we can really look and see the beauty around us, and it can be anything. It could be our home. It could be a flower. It could be the sky. It brings joy. And so oftentimes we don't even pay attention. You know, we're sort of on autopilot and we're busy and we're stressed. And that's why mindfulness, the practice, is so important, when we can just take that time for ourselves or go on a walk and just enjoy the beauty and the sounds and the feel of the wind or the sun on our skin. Those are things that make our life so, so pleasurable, even if we're experiencing stressful times or pain or grief, which we all do. You know, nobody is immune from, we'll say, heartbreak and loss. So it's about the moments. We need those moments to feel the pain, but we can also take those moments to feel the joy. It's all of it. And it's not bad or good. It's just a part of it.
You say it so well, and we do all experience loss, and many people are emerging from this pandemic with great feelings of loss. They might have lost a loved one to COVID-19. They might have experienced abundant depression and anxiety as a result of being isolated and in quarantine. I mean, that's one reason that I wrote the book, Love in the Time of Corona, Advice from a Sex Therapist for Couples in Quarantine. One last little plug about the book. It's, a lot of people are thinking, well, it's not relevant anymore. Well, it is to a degree. A blurb on the back says, it's a year's worth of sex therapy in one volume. And that blurb was by somebody you know very well.
I mean, look at, I mean, if I make a suggestion to you, Dr. Diana.
I would love to.
I was actually thinking
about it. I'm all ears.
I always said that your book was so much more than about a pandemic, because it really is just incredible information and exercises. I think it's time to maybe do a revised edition with some sort of different title. It could be Formally, or it could be Love in the Time of Corona and other whatever life events. I don't know, but I do think it could be revised so it could be out there indefinitely and people won't think of it just as a book to read during a pandemic, because it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's just so, so helpful and insightful and informative for people who really want to up their game and have better sex and better relationships. So that's my two cents.
Thank you.
I think it's something to think about. Yeah.
You know, we have, of course, Brian and I have talked, Brian, who helped me immensely to write the book, my husband. So he and I have talked about how we might repurpose, revise the book. It's a small book, It is packed with a lot of good information, and it's that I've been doing this work for 35 years. It helped a lot because I had a lot of information and exercises to do, things that I know work with couples that I see. Like you, I've seen thousands of couples over the years, thousands. So nothing beats experience.
And we learn so much from them, right? I mean, I know you do,
right,
too. We learn so much from our clients. So it's professional, it's personal, it's all that life experience. And, you know, there's so much information out there about sex, and not all of it is helpful. And so to be able to go to the source where it's somebody who is educated and experienced, who's worked with all of these people and experienced what that means, I mean, it's invaluable. So it's a definitely a great, great resource for couples. I highly recommend it. And, you know, the things that you talk about on your show, even, you know, sex and food, it's important. It sounds like a fun topic, and it is a fun topic, but it also makes so much sense You know, how do you get the most pleasure and satisfaction in life and in your relationships? And sex and food are such a big part of that. I mean, think about food. I mean, it's centered around most things, social, you know, and when we get together with loved ones or when we have a big event, food is a huge, huge part of it. So it's something to be taken, I think, seriously in the sense that, yes, we have to eat to live. We have to eat to live. We don't want to live to eat. To a point, I do think that there's something to be said for letting ourselves enjoy food fully. And I do think that when we eat consciously and we don't, you know, necessarily just eat anything because it gives us pleasure, like Cheetos, for example, nothing against Cheetos. You know, we may really love them, but if we ate them all the time, that probably wouldn't be the best thing. But I think if we eat consciously, we can be healthier and happier and certainly find it to be a supplement to our sex life.
You say it very well. And to extend this a little more, I think as for the psychological aspects, if food makes you feel, or an aphrodisiac, or what you imagine to be an aphrodisiac, if it makes you feel sexy or contributes to your sexual arousal or satisfaction, then it is an aphrodisiac. And and I think that you know, having a healthy self-image is vital, of course, to thoroughly enjoying sex, because if you feel sexy, you will be sexy, and so that helps. And if maybe you cook together and do it together, that can be a lot of fun in the kitchen to cook together. And
it really is, to create together and cook together. Mm-hmm. And you can also find out a lot about somebody the way that, you know, they partner up. It's kind of like building IKEA furniture together. You can learn a lot, you know, about how somebody can take direction or how they can work as a team. But it can be really fun. And I know even with this guy I recently was dating on our third date, he came over and we cooked pasta together. It was so much fun. So it's a fun, enjoyable thing. And then when you get to eat it, it's just an added benefit as well. I look forward to cooking for you again. That's going to be fun.
I know. Yes. It's so much fun to travel again. and so we're planning, Brian and I are planning a trip to the Bay Area where a lot of my relatives are. But we're going to make a trip to Napa, and we're going to be Lori's house guests for a couple of nights. And you already, in an earlier conversation we had off the air, you're already planning all these delightful things. I can hardly wait.
I know, me too. Well, nowadays, you know, it used to be you can come to Napa, you go to wineries, and nowadays you do need to make reservations quite, you know, in advance. It's getting really popular. People are coming out here, and I'm a member of a lot of different wineries, but you do need to make these advance reservations. So I wanted to make sure we would be able to go to some of my favorite places. So I'm looking forward to having you guys over. And again, you know, we think about life a year ago compared to now, and, you know, we couldn't have people over for dinner. I mean, and I didn't.
Right.
I know some people did, but I think the majority of people did not. You know, we stuck to the rules. It was a scary time. It seems like so long ago. So to be able to just have people in your home and to be able to have dinner or go to a restaurant or a winery, it's exciting. It really is. I think there's for me anyways, a whole new level of appreciation where things we would before COVID take for granted.
Absolutely. It's one of the silver linings of the pandemic. We don't take stuff for granted. At least most of us don't. We relish in being able to get together with friends and cook and all of that. Now, before we run out of time, I want to spend a little time talking about stuffoflove.com. That's your website. Dr. Lori's regular website is drloribuckley.com. This will all be in my show notes. But stuffoflove.com, there are two things that I love from personally love from your Stuff of Love website, which I have, and that's the Lilo Cruise, which is like a suction for a woman's clitoris.
Yeah, I call it a clit sucker. Yes.
Clit sucker, yes, a clit sucker. Unbelievable. Yes. And without your guidance, because you try all of these are personally picked items, and please talk about that and talk about Love My Vulva, another product that is wonderful, and then the discount that you're going to offer our listeners. So talk about your stuffoflove.com in general, yes, please do that.
Yes. Well, thank you. I'd love to talk about it. It is, certainly something I'm passionate about. And I just thought it would be great to have a website where, you know, couples could go or individuals could go and find a place that didn't just have a bunch of toys from China. Not that I'm saying that's bad, but really just hand-curated, tested products and toys that I know that could be something that couples could benefit from, or individuals for that matter. And I do have different sections. I have for him, I have for her, I also have for couples. And I don't have a lot of toys and products on there. Again, I just have ones that I think are going to be the best and the ones that are people that are going to enjoy. I talk about all the products, and I am always available to contact me through email, where I can answer all of your questions if you have any specific questions about any of the products. So they're good. Like, there's the clit suckers, which are one different type of vibrator than the typical conventional one, where it literally has a sort of a little bit of an opening that you put over your clit with some lube, and it gives you all different types of stimulation, but it has more of a sucking motion than a vibrating motion, although it does vibrate as well. So it's a product that a lot of women who don't typically like vibrators or have difficulty with orgasms, they really do like those kinds of vibrators. But I have so many different ones. I have G-spot vibrators and ones that are a combination, sort of a newer form of a rabbit, which makes more sense than the old-fashioned ones. But I also have Love My Vulva, which is a product that I saw a need for with all of the couples and the women that I work with, and I had it created. I found a chemist that I had heard about in Canada, and we worked together and created this all-natural massage gel. It's actually a massage gel, but it also is arousing. And what I found was that couples who engaged in a vulva massage without any pressure to, you know, have any kind of orgasms or penetrative sex, there was a lot more sex possible for couples who might feel there's a discrepancy in their desire, where the woman isn't feeling so aroused or having a high desire for sex. The act of her being massaged, having her vulva massaged, again, without any expectation, was something that was really working for a lot of my clients. And so I wanted to get not just a lube, but a massage gel that was going to be moisturizing and good for the vulva and also increase the level of arousal. So that's what Love My Vulva does, and it works. And everybody who's used it just loves it. And
that's right.
I love it too. I have it on my nightstand as we speak. And it's a wonderful product, and I just highly recommend it. And on my website, I also do have a link to with information how to give and receive a vulva massage. So even if you don't want to purchase Love My Vulva, you can go onto the website, stuffoflove.com, and you can find that vulva massage information there. So that's a great thing. I also have CPR cards, which are a card deck
that I
created.
Talk about those, because they're a lot of fun. CPR, that stands for, and this is your own creation too.
So I created that also where I see a need, right? So it's for, C is for connection, And P is for passion and R is for romance. So there's a little of about 91 cards, I believe, in the deck. And so they're color-coded where they're either about connection, which is just getting information, and they're good for couples who've been together for years, and they're good for new couples as well, just to ask each other questions that they may not have thought about to connect a little bit more. And then the romance cards are different romantic ideas of things that they can do to create some romance and some fun. And then the passion is all about sex. So they can pick these as they want. They could say, let's just do passion tonight, or they can do them in order, or they can mix them up. And it's just a great tool for couples to be able to have something to do on their date night or their play dates where, you know, sometimes you just sort of lose your inspiration. Like, what do we do? What do we talk about? And it's a fun way to incorporate some of those different ideas, whether it's around romance or connection or passion. So that's
and I have suggested it to some of my clients, because one of the rules that I give, and I'm sure you do this too, is that when a couple has a play date, a date night, whatever they call it, they're not allowed to talk about the children or about their work, but to keep it about the relationship. And I think this CPR that you've developed is it's perfect. It keeps it about the relationship, and it gets them talking. And we need that.
So true. Yes, it's so true. And I don't want to forget, before we run out of time, if you go to stuffoflove.com and you purchase anything and you put in the code at checkout, PLAY, P-L-A-Y 20, you will get 20% off on your whole order. So that's a pretty good deal. So
play
it does
20
expire
at
August 1st.
Up until August 1st. So get to it, people. This is a wonderful website.
Yes, take advantage.
Dr. Lori has picked out really good things and has created other good things, and she knows. She is knowledgeable and entrepreneurial and beautiful. You're beautiful, Lori. You're just beautiful.
Well, back at you, Dr. Diana. You're one of the most beautiful people I know. Inside
Thank
and
you.
Out.
Well, that's
I
why we're that. Friends. And we appreciate each other's pluses and
we'll
what
just
we
say
can
that.
Contribute.
Accept the other parts as well. So
yeah, that's true. So, that's true.
Yes. Yes.
Because none of
Although
us
we haven't
perfect.
Spent enough time together to see the big flaws, but you know, I'm sure it would be okay too. We'll see how we feel after we spend a couple nights together with you as my house guest. I think I'm going to love you even more. That's what I think.
Oh, well, I loved you even more when we were your house guests. When
That's
in
true.
The Hollywood Hills, that was just great. That was just great. So it's going to work out, can hardly wait. That's the thing. We haven't been able to travel much at all, and so it was just so liberating to be able to get out, and that's what we're looking forward to very, very much. So let's review. We want the listeners to go to love my Stuff of Love, and you're going to enter play 20 at checkout, and you'll get 20% off, which is a lot off, and that's a very good deal, Lori. And and we've talked about sex and food, and they are linked, absolutely linked. And we know that both have certain hungers in common, and isn't it fun to be a woman of high appetites?
Yes,
for sex,
absolutely.
For food. You know, it's because it also implies that you're really lusty and engaged in life and passionate about life, and you're sensual and all of those things. So we have similar interests, so it's not surprising that we are good friends as well as colleagues, right? We have similar interests.
Absolutely. Right? Yes. And, you know, some of it is just about having an open heart, allowing yourself to receive, being in the moment, working on getting out of your head. And, you know, it's about enjoying your life, living your best life, and just, you know, embracing and savoring all of the wonderful things life has to offer, and food and sex are definitely a big part of that. And it's been so much fun to talk to you about these things. As always, I always love talking to you, Diana.
Well, it's absolutely mutual, some people have been damaged by the quarantine and might need a little professional help. And now that we're seeing people on Zoom, they can be almost anywhere. Do you see people out of state, or because you're licensed in California, how does that work for you?
I do. I see people. So, it might be considered coaching if they're out of state. I'm licensed in California. So, but I do see people all over the place.
Yeah. I do too, to a degree. That's also nice. I really have enjoyed seeing clients on Zoom. A lot of therapists don't like it, but all right.
We have okay. It's been wonderful. Thanks, all the listeners, and thank you, Diana, for having me on your show. As always, I appreciate
it. You're welcome. We'll do it again soon, Lori, and can't wait to see you next month. Take care and enjoy the best of sex and food, and sometimes together if you feed each other. Enjoy. Bye-bye, everybody.